He kind of started all the plants growing, and he started people. Well, I guess he's kind of big and fat.
He can see us whatever we do. Whatever we do, he has such powerful eyes. He doesn't have millions and thousands and billions. And he can still see us when we're bad.
He could be sitting on the table right now, but you can't see him.
He can't be everywhere at once doing everything for everybody. Everybody can't get what they want.
Welcome to the broadcast today, ladies and gentlemen. My name is David Stovenel. This podcast is called Operation Restore Christian America. And the specific title of today's broadcast is A Closer Look at the Clinton Global Initiative. I'll be reading part of a paper of a letter. It's 9 pages long. It's posted on my website, genuinechristianitynow.com, and I encourage each and every one of you to read it in its complete form when you can find time or get time after the broadcast or when you're not traveling, for those of you that are listening over the radio stations that are producing this or that are broadcasting this. Anyway, this the Clinton Global Initiative is actually becoming a little bit less of a news item than it really deserves to be for this reason. It's vastly, vastly more powerful and influential than most people are aware of. So we'll take a closer look at the Clinton Global Initiative, and the way that we'll do it is, once again, I'll begin reading from this analysis, this paper that reveals a lot about the British Fabian socialist dream to take over the world, the globalist dream, by the people that pretend to be our friend, but they are as vicious and anti-American as anyone that has ever existed. And while they try to pawn off the blame on other nations of people, the Cubans, the Russians, the Chinese, the Iraqis, and I will just stop at that. You could go on and on. But the United States of America is the number one target of the British royal sovereign and the British organization. Anyway, this is titled the Clinton Global Initiative, this paper, and I'll just proceed now and once again encourage you to go to GenuineChristianityNow.com and read this in its entirety for yourself. I won't be able to have enough time to read the entire 9-page paper because we have a rather interesting audio that will be played during the later part of this show, and the title of that will be Mind Control, Entering into the Mind of the Jehovah's Witness by a Christian lady named Melissa Doherty. Anyway, the Clinton Global Initiative and Bill and Hillary's soon coming appointment as Governor General and Deputy Governor General of the new Sovietized America, spelled with a K, America, the former United States, by John D. Christian, New Zealand, January 2008. This paper is written in the global public interest and is not copyright. Feel free to use it as you wish. The movie America. In the middle of February 1987, over 20 years ago, the most controversial British propaganda film ever broadcast throughout the United States was a $40 million ABC TV 14 and one half hour miniseries called America, which was beamed over 7 nights, 9 to 11 p.m., between 15 February to 22 February to the naive, gullible American public. The incredible film, although largely forgotten about now, enacted in great detail the long-held British Fabian Society's Anglo-Soviet Communist plot to ruthlessly destroy the United States of America and convert it into a leper colony of the City of London Corporation, headed by the British sovereign. The film forecast that this would happen during a national and probably a global state of emergency and period of financial and political chaos, in which the U.S. dollar specifically would not only be targeted by British bankers to become almost totally valueless, Americans would actually be seen burning their worthless currency in the streets in protest, while the nation as a whole would be turned into a war zone. The stock market and financial system would be deliberately crashed. The country would be severely plagued by dire food shortages and fuel rationing, riots, lawlessness, mass unemployment, and everything else that goes with it. In the film, under the imposition of strict martial law, led by a specialist UN-appointed Russian general and colonel, under directions from a central committee in Moscow who want to nuke the Americans to teach them a lesson, leading American political traitors secretly prostitute themselves to these foreign Russian socialist powers, who are really secret British agents, and assist them in destroying the country and setting up the new administration. The Russians brutally remove the president from power and replace him with a British governor general, Peter Bradford, played by Robert Urich, alias Bill Clinton, ? And a woman deputy governor general, Marion Milford Andrews, played by Wendy Hughes, alias Hillary Clinton, Then, divide the United States up into 12 Soviet-styled administrative areas under a North American Union. A map in the film shows what these administrative areas are going to be. As a symbolic gesture of the destruction of America, most of the members of Congress are brutally murdered in the House of Representatives during a terrorist attack led by the Russians after they refused to disband their body before the U.S. Capitol building is burnt. I want to digress for a moment. Those of you that are traveling now and listening on the radio or at home listening on the radio. Over the last few weeks, one of these segments of this made-for-TV miniseries is being posted on Genuine Christianity Now also. But reading this analysis of that made-for-TV miniseries is necessary in order to get anything other than a bland entertainment out of it, as dreadful of a movie as it is. It is very entertaining. And I might want to add that I apologize for the soft pornography in it that shows bedroom scenes, but not graphically. So anyway, back to this article. Rhodes scholars and Fulbright scholars, secret British Fabian Society agents. Two of the leading characters in the film are Colonel Andre Denisov, played by New Zealand actor Sam Neill, and Devin Milford, played by Chris Christopherson. Both these actors are former Rhodes Scholars. All Rhodes Scholars are indoctrinated under the British Rhodes Trust Secret Society program at Oxford University to bring in a new world ordered government with London and the British aristocracy at the head. All Rhodes Scholars are in fact secret British agents. The American sub-branch of the Rhodes Scholarship Program at Oxford is the Fulbright Scholarship Program, founded in 1946 by J. William Fulbright, himself a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, 1928-31. The Rhodes Trust was established in the early 1900s, following the death of Cecil Rhodes, 1853-1902, with money from his estate. Rhodes was taught at Oxford University by a Christian socialist professor called John Ruskin, 1819-1900, a Freemason and fascist. Nazi swastikas may still today be seen carved into his gravestone at Coniston in England. Currently, for example, two of the present trustees of the Rhodes Trust are Lord Ashburton, Sir John Baring, who heads the giant Baring Brothers Bank and who is also a member of the Order of the Garter. Another is Lord Armstrong, Baron Sir Robert Temple Armstrong, who has served as private secretary to the British Prime Minister. Many of the British Freemasons that were intimately involved in setting up the Fabian Society in 1884 were also involved in setting up the Rhodes Trust, principally the British Rothschilds. In his 1888 revised will, Rhodes said, "In considering questions suggested, take Constitution of the Jesuits, if obtainable, and insert English Empire for Roman Catholic religion." That quote is from The World's Banker by Niall Ferguson, pages 881-890. And that is what Nathaniel Natty de Rothschild, 1814-1915, did in setting up the Rhodes Trust with Milner. Before he became British Prime Minister in 1997, Tony Blair was chairman of the Fabian Society. He is now also a secret leading member of the Clinton Global Initiative. More about this following. Apostate Protestantism is 1,000 times more subtle and insidious than Roman Catholicism. Members of the Fabian Society created and still do control the world's labor parties, Soviet communism, German, Italian, and American fascism. Rhodes and Fulbright scholars now dominate virtually all of the world's largest business corporations, governments, the UN, and the control and running of the Roman Catholic Church, including the Jesuits. Rhodes and Fulbright scholarships now provide the most prestigious awards and honors of all the leading Jesuit universities around the world, the United States being no exception. Bill Clinton was awarded his Rhodes Scholarship at America's leading Jesuit university, Georgetown. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've read something from this analysis that is posted on genuinechristianitynow.com. And once again, I just implore each and every one of you to go through this and then watch through the mini-series that is also being posted each week. Now we're going to go to the audio of Melissa Doherty with this particular presentation that she offers called Mind Control, Entering into the Mind of the Jehovah's Witness. And make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, this is a lady that has a great deal of love and respect for these people that she is bringing the truth of Jesus Christ to, and how their operation does, in fact, operate on their mind to control what they think and what they do. So, Mr. Producer, would you please go to that and begin that broadcast, sir? It appears there may be a slight delay in that. Anyway, I'll continue with the article for a bit until we get that started. People like Leo J. Donovan, a leading Jesuit and president of Georgetown University, 1989 to 2001. Kul Chandra Gautam, UN Assistant Secretary General and Deputy Executive Director of UNICEF. Boutros Ghali, UN Secretary General, 1992 to 96. And now it appears that we will be able to go to the broadcast of the mind control presentation.
Today's topic is about mind control. Cue Twilight Zone music. When people think about mind control, a lot of things they think about are like brainwashing or people being forced to believe something. Mind control is really different. I see mind control as something that's more subtle. You don't really notice it, but we're going to talk about this today because the reason why I start with mind control with Jehovah's Witnesses or any high control religion is because you must understand why they're so hard to talk to. If you can understand mind control, you will understand the mind of the witness. Now, I know that this is going to be a long video already. I know, because there's so much information. But I mean, this is a very important topic. We're going to talk about a few ways throughout this whole series on how you can penetrate that mind control, how to get past it. A lot of this information is out there for people to research. I have to give credit where credit is due and thank this man, Stephen Hassan. He used to be in the Mooney religion. I think they call it Unification Church. It's a cult. And after he was deprogrammed from leaving the Moonies, he went and got a lot of fancy degrees and became a cult expert. And this is the book that I have read in preparation for this video. I'm mainly going to focus on what he calls the bite model, which we will go over that later in this video. Also, other websites that have really helped me a lot with putting this information together. There's a lot of them. I will put these websites in the description of this video. A major one, and it's one of my favorite websites to refer to about Jehovah's Witnesses, and it's been around for a while, is jwfacts.com. It is a wealth of information. You will find a lot of this information that I'm going to share with you on their website. Another website that I always refer to and I really enjoy is a website called forjehovah.org. It's for people who are really trying to reach out to Jehovah's Witnesses. You can even get in contact with a lot of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses on that website and try to get a little bit more insight on how to witness to them and what the beliefs are of the Jehovah's Witnesses. I find mind control to be a very fascinating topic because we can see this in many aspects of our lives. It could be political. It could be religious. It could be within relationships, and I think it's crucial to go over this before we really go over the teachings of the Jehovah's Witnesses, to understand them and their mindsets I'm assuming that most people that watch this video may not have a lot of experience with Jehovah's Witnesses and their teachings. I'm assuming that a lot of people that are watching this video are Christians who want to either learn more about Jehovah's Witnesses or maybe have a loved one that's, lost in the religion and you want to know how to reach them. I'm hoping and praying that this video is a great resource for you. And if you guys have followed me for any amount of time, I'm really passionate about understanding the position of the person you're trying to reach first. Because I think once you understand that and you have insight on where they're coming from, you then have a better way to reach them because you understand their language. You understand their mind language, if that makes sense. So to start off, I'm actually going to quote the Watchtower in talking about mind control. You will see a lot of quotes in this whole series. You will see a lot of quotes in this video. I really want to back up the religious teachings that they have with what the religion actually says. So here's a quote. It says, "We cannot claim to love God yet deny his word and channel of communication." Now, this is a very telling quote because you can't love God yet deny his channel of communication. You can't love God and deny his organization. So before we start off with anything, right off the bat, understand that in the mind of the Jehovah's Witness, when you deny the organization, you're denying Jehovah God. They are one and the same. I'm also going to point out the definition of contextualization. Some people might know what that means. Some people may not. It's a fancy word for aiding comprehension when spreading the gospel. So in other words, to contextualize what you're saying means to tailor your presentation of the gospel that's dependent on the ears that are hearing it. You're not adapting your message. You are contextualizing it. You're understanding your audience and the sociological context that they are in so they can understand what you're saying better. So let me give you an example of this. I have given this example before in a previous video that was talking about how the Jehovah's Witnesses brought me out of the New Age. It's a long story, but I actually heard this example in college. I took a sociology class, and I really loved this class. I learned a lot about the function of people and how they function in society and how the person is different than the people and all this stuff. In this class, my sociology teacher was giving us a lesson on culture and how in each culture in the world differs from one another and how what we might think is appropriate in our culture is not in another. So if you say something, like for example, handshaking might be completely off limits in one culture, and even knocking on somebody's door might be an offense. Whereas in other cultures, you stay outside the fence and yell their name. And it's understanding the culture and the context of the society in which they live. Well, she was giving an example of soup, instant soup, in this little town in Italy. And it was a long time ago that I remember this, so I'm not sure of the specifics of where in Italy or anything like this, but Italians take their food very seriously. Well, here in America, we like instant soup. We eat it often. It's on our grocery shelves, and we don't really think too much of it when we open a little packet of instant soup or a can and eat it. So there was an instant soup company here in America that decided to outsource. They wanted to go in other places in the world and sell their product. And they decided, what better place than this little town in Italy? So they went and they tested this and gave away free samples of their product to people in this region. And people loved it. They ate it up. They thought it tasted delicious. So they thought, yeah, slam dunk. We're going to sell our product in this region and we're going to make millions of dollars and everything's great. So they did that. They put it on the shelves of the markets there and lost their shirts. It didn't sell hardly at all. They were completely baffled. So they wanted to get down to the bottom of this. What happened? Why did people love the way it tasted and they loved it? But then when they put it on the shelf, virtually nobody bought it. What happened? I'm sure they hired a bunch of fancy people to go and do this research, but they did. They researched the culture that they were selling this item to. And they came back with some pretty interesting results. Turns out in this particular region that they were selling this instant soup in, the amount of time you spend making dinner for your family is a direct reflection of how much you love them. So think about that for a second. If you're making instant soup for your family for dinner, and it takes, I don't know, a minute or two to make, and that's a direct reflection of your show of love to them, that's going to be an insulting thing to your family. From what they understood, the families would spend hours making dinner for their family. It would be like half the day sometimes, and they're elaborate meals. And though it tasted good, nobody in their right mind in this region would buy the instant soup because of that cultural offense that it would make to everybody else. So I give this example because this is a backdrop to why we need to understand the culture of the witness. We're not going to give them instant soup. We're going to actually look at what's more effective in reaching them. In order to do that, we must understand where they're coming from. We must understand their mind. Once you know how their mind works, you're going to know a lot better of what not to do and what to do. I think a lot of people assume that Jehovah's Witnesses are just like any other denomination out there. They're not. They're tough cookies. They're hard to talk to. So with all that being said, we're going to delve a little bit more into mind control. In Steve Hassan's book, Releasing the Bonds, he explains that basically the fancy word for mind control is coercive persuasion. This is also the same term that's used for brainwashing, though mind control is different than brainwashing. The first study that was done to show this and to demonstrate this was done by a man named Robert Lifton in the 1950s. This was when a lot of stuff was happening with communism. He specifically looked at Chinese communist techniques. And it was through that research that he saw a lot of constants. And it wasn't just in China. These are techniques that are used almost everywhere in many different organizations in many different types of settings. Something interesting I also like to point out while talking about this is that we can kind of understand this more than we know by looking at popular movies, for example. One example is 1984 by George Orwell. A lot of people have read this book. I love this book. I read it as a senior in high school. It was required reading, and I'm so glad I read it. It really opened my eyes to how stuff like this can actually work. And granted, it's fiction. Parts of it have strings of truth in it. If you have not read 1984 by George Orwell, it's a very good book. And other movies where you might see cultish or cult-like themes, believe it or not, is, I think, Tangled, the movie Tangled, the Disney movie, because Rapunzel's told that the world is a certain way, and there's a lot of fear tactics, there's a lot of unhealthy love given by Mother Gothel, and I mean, every time I watch this movie, it reminds me of the Jehovah's Witnesses, where Mother Gothel is the organization and Rapunzel's kind of like the witnesses that are just blindly following. But if you try to leave, if you try to look out and see, wow, there's more out there, maybe they're wrong, then you are definitely going to be shamed and you're going to be filled with fear. And I was really shocked when I first watched that movie where I'm like, wow. Maybe one of the writers was an ex-Jehovah's Witness. Another one is The Village, because they're living under this world where they think that it's a reality. They think that that's really what's true. And their leaders are the ones that are kind of keeping them, you know, stuck in that world. And it's not until you fight your way out, basically, that you find out it's all a big lie. So, spoiler alert. I've never seen this movie, but The Manchurian Candidate, I hear, is a like a cultish movie, and then The Truman Show. So those are just some examples to give you where you might understand how the locks work, what mind control kind of looks like. But we're going to go into a lot more detail about this. So moving on, we're going to look at some main indicators of mind control. A religion that's practicing mind control techniques has the power to manipulate humans to believe unrealistic doctrine and engage in destructive behavior. Here are some examples. Members of suicide cults and suicide bombers that sacrifice their own life and kill innocent members of the public. Parents that allow their child to die refusing medical treatments. Jehovah's Witnesses are known for refusing blood transfusions, which we'll get into later on in the series. Mothers and fathers are instructed to shun their own children, or children that shun their parents and siblings for life due to a difference of opinion over religion or morals. Next is the leadership deserves strict, unquestioning obedience. There's a saying, and I posted it a few weeks ago on my Instagram. It says that there's problems with the religions that have all the answers is that they don't allow questions. So a Jehovah's Witness will tell you, oh yeah, we ask questions. We're allowed to ask questions, but you're only allowed to ask certain questions. You don't question authority. That's a big no-no with Jehovah's Witnesses. You do not question your leaders. That is questioning Jehovah himself in the mind of the witness. So you blindly follow, but they will not think of it like they're blindly following their leadership because they trust their leadership. If you can convince anybody that you hear from God, then they're going to believe anything you say. They're going to believe everything you say. They're going to trust that what you are saying is from God. So as long as that trust is there, then what you're saying in that leadership is going to be received by the people underneath you who trust what you're saying because you have convinced them that you're hearing from God. And because you hear from God, you shouldn't question them. You're questioning God himself then as a result. How dare you? Another one is that people and groups that are under mind control believe that they alone are unique in teaching truth. They alone have the truth. You are on the outside. They are on the inside. They have special revelation, special knowledge, and you're outside of that, which means you're less than, you're not as spiritual as they are. You do not have the truth. They have the truth. You don't. And it's very black and white. It's very us versus them, which we'll get into that a little bit later. Salvation is only possible through association with the group. You must go through the religion to be saved versus Jesus alone to be saved. So all the saving actions of Jesus are put on the back burner because the religion or the group or the organization, in this case, the religion of Jehovah's Witnesses, the Watchtower, steps in place of that saving action. Jesus is only part of it. As Christians, as people who read the Bible and study the Bible, even people who are not Christians can clearly read the Bible and see that this is the theology of Christianity, that it's through Jesus alone that we're saved. Jesus plus nothing, not Jesus plus anything. So to the mind of the witness, Jesus is part of it. It's Jesus plus the organization. You have to be a part of this organization to be real Christians. And they call it the truth, which we'll get into later on what that means to them. But to them, that's the truth. This is the truth of Christianity. And if you're not in it, then you're a part of Satan's world. So basically what the Watchtower says is you have to go through us in order to get to God. Instead of saying, oh, you have to go through Jesus to get to God, it's you have to go through the Watchtower to get to God. They take the place of Jesus. Lastly, people who reject or leave the organization or religion or group are to be strictly shunned. Now, a Jehovah's Witness will say that they don't shun. They do. It's just a different term that they use. And when I say shun, you guys, I'm talking like you don't exist. It doesn't matter if it's your child. It doesn't matter if it's your husband. It doesn't matter if it's your best friend. If they leave the religion or if they're disfellowshipped, which means that they are kicked out for some reason or another, which we'll get into what some of those reasons are later, you are to be shunned. This is a very strong psychological hold to keep you in the group, because if you leave, you are leaving everything and everyone you know. A lot of people stay because their loved ones are in the group, not because they necessarily believe, but they would rather have their families than be shunned and be completely isolated. As we get more into doctrine, we will find out why they believe that and just a little bit more of the teachings that the organization holds on this topic. So this is a basic overview of things that we find in high control groups that practice these kinds of things. I am going to talk a little bit more about Stephen Hassan because his work is monumental for people who are trying to learn about those that are under mind control and in high control religions. So for those of you who are wondering about who he is, some people might know who he is because they maybe look into this stuff. His whole goal is to do this research to help people understand the mind of people that are in cults. So he specializes in this stuff. He does have a lot of good information in here. I'm going to read some excerpts from part of his book that I think would be very helpful in moving forward. Now, I'm going to look at chapter 4, and I'm going to read part of it to you because I think it's important to understand how and why people join cults. How does this happen? And for people who are wondering, is Jehovah's Witnesses a cult? It's a strong word, I get that, but yeah, in this aspect, because of the mind control techniques and tactics that are used, yeah, they definitely would fall under the category of a cult. But in regards to people being susceptible to joining these high control groups, this is what he says. Most people would like to believe that they are in complete control of their mind at all times. But it is precisely this belief in our own invulnerability that allows cults to entrap unsuspecting recruits. There are three primary reasons why intelligent, educated people with stable backgrounds can be drawn into cults. First, there's a persuasive lack of awareness about cults and mind control, which is why I'm starting with this video, by the way, when it comes to this topic. Second, many situations make people more vulnerable to recruitment. For example, a person whose parents have recently separated or divorced will be more likely to listen to a recruiter who describes his group as one big happy family. Someone whose romantic relationship or marriage has just ended will be more susceptible to come-ons by an attractive person. Other common variables include death of a loved one, illness, loss of a job, graduation from high school or college, and moving to a new location, city, state, or country. Situational vulnerabilities occur in everyone's life. It is easy to see how people tend to be more vulnerable to an attractive recruiter offering community, love, and meaning during such episodes. A lot of the people that join the Jehovah's Witnesses do have some sort of emotional need of some sort. Some people are looking for truth. They're seeking God. They really do want to know more about spiritual things. And lo and behold, here comes a Jehovah's Witness who seems to have all the answers. And we'll go over more of their strict routine and how they can just spit out answers left and right because they're so highly trained in what they believe. They know what they believe. And there's a saying that they'll get you in a doctrinal chokehold. If you do not know your Bible, they really will put up their spiritual duke, so to speak, and really challenge what you believe because they are drilled. If you are born in the Jehovah's Witness religion, you are drilled from the time you are young into what the religion teaches, what the Watchtower says, and that they have the truth. And that if you're outside the truth, you're going to die at Armageddon, which I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but just keep that in mind, that the reasons why people join this religion is that they do seem confident sometimes in what they believe. And I think that's attractive to some people. On another note, also, a lot of this does apply to Mormons, LDS. You guys have heard me say this before, and I will always say this. I love Mormons. I love LDS people. But a lot of them will even admit that they know that there's lots of issues with the church. They, to some degree, even some of them will admit they know it's not true, but they still stay. And the reason why they stay is because of the community that the LDS have. They have a very strong sense of family and community, and to them, that is worth staying. So continuing reading in chapter 4, I have a feeling a lot of people will resonate with this particular paragraph that I'm about to read because I think a lot of people can understand how we would look to fill a certain void if we have certain things that would make us more vulnerable to deception, whether it be getting in a bad relationship, a toxic religion, whatever the case may be. This is what he says. Finally, some individuals have psychological profiles that make recruitment easier for cults. In general, people who have difficulty thinking critically will be easier targets. People pleasers who seek the approval of their peer group out of insecurity, and anyone with low self-esteem will be more vulnerable to the peer pressure exerted by the cult recruiters. Individuals with learning disorders, drug or alcohol problems, unresolved sexual issues, pre-existing phobias, and other unresolved traumatic issues will also be easier targets. Cults seek out such vulnerabilities and use them against recruits, often making grandiose claims that their group will solve all of the person's problems. Now, this is really key, because I find this particular thing I find across a lot of religious institutions in general, because they try to take the place of God. I know that sounds weird, but in the Watchtower in particular, to narrow the focus here, you are promised happiness if you join Jehovah's organization. Now, it's never just Jesus, okay? Jesus alone fills that void. So for a little while, you're going to find comfort. For a little while, you're going to find acceptance. And this goes for anything. It could be any kind of group that you're going to feel really good at first. I call it the honeymoon phase. And whatever new thing it is, it's, ooh, it's shiny, it's new, and you're there. This is why Jesus says he's the bread of life. This is why he's the living water. Because when you follow him, when he's your everything, then you thirst no more. You hunger no more spiritually. And I think that's such a key point to make, because Jehovah's Witnesses fill their void through religion, their religion, and their religious works. You got to do so much, and then you never know if you're good enough. You never know if you're going to be surviving Armageddon. I mean, it's the guilt and the fear is paramount, and we'll get into a lot of the guilt and the fear later on in this video. Stephen Hassan, he writes this in his book. He basically has something called the BITE model, and it's easy to remember. BITE is an acronym, and each letter stands for something different. The B stands for behavior control. I is information control. T is thought control. And E is emotional control. We're going to go over each one and how it applies to the Watchtower. The BITE method is a simple way to test if a group is engaged in persuasive coercion and mind control. Now, he did adapt this from another expert's research. There is a lot more in his book about the ins and outs of all of this, but I think that it's rather kind of genius, if you will, that Hassan made the BITE model, because it simplifies what types of things happen in these high control groups to get the outcome, the desired outcome of their followers. All right, so let's go over behavior control in the Watchtower Society. So the Watchtower Society has an intricate set of standards, of rules that's not specified in the Bible, but is very unique to the Watchtower. Things like your hair. So you have to be well kept. There is no beards. Beards are seen as worldly for the most part. Your clothing, they are dressed to the nines every Sunday when they go to their kingdom hall. And if you're a Jehovah's Witness woman and you're walking into the kingdom hall every Sunday, your dress better not be above your knee. You are a Jehovah's Witness. You represent Jehovah. The length of your skirt better be acceptable, as well as everything else that should be acceptable. There are no tattoos. The movies that you're watching should not be anything that's worldly. Music, they don't, and this might surprise a lot of Christians, but we'll get into why this is as we get into more of their doctrine, but they don't listen to Christian music. That's worldly. That's satanic. If you are a Jehovah's Witness and you are listening to Christian music of any kind, you are seen as a weak Jehovah's Witness. this is a no-no because the songs, they're singing about Jesus, which is not okay. They should, it's all about Jehovah, and you're idolizing Jesus, and that's weird to a Jehovah's Witness. But they don't listen to any Christian music. They actually think that we're in Satan's system, like we are in Satan's world. So as me being a Bible-believing Christian outside of the organization, they would view what I do and what I have to say as being basically on the side of Satan. But I could go on about that, but I think it's, you know, another thing that the Watchtower emphasizes to help control their behavior. There is no gambling. There is no smoking. No political involvement at all. They don't vote. They don't run in politics. They don't do anything like that. They don't salute the flag. They stay away from that stuff. Holidays and entertainment are all dictated. Jehovah's Witnesses do not have, they don't celebrate any holidays. No birthdays, no Christmas, no Halloween, which some people might know them for that. But I mean, no Mother's Day, no Father's Day, Valentine's Day, nothing. It's all worldly and pagan. So it's important to point out that the Watchtower does dictate everything that the witness does. Who you hang out with, are they a Jehovah's Witness? Are they a good Jehovah's Witness? Are they worldly? Your association matters. This is they call this bad association, which we'll get into more later. But who you associate with as a Jehovah's Witness does reflect on your standing in Jehovah's organization. So you better be hanging out with the right people. Hang out with other Jehovah's Witnesses that are in good standing and you're okay for the most part. Another thing that is really telling about high control groups is how rigid your schedule is. So for a Jehovah's Witness, the meetings that you attend each week and how many hours you have witnessing are considered acceptable and how to report it. So you should be spending more time with Jehovah. You should be spending more time going door to door. You should be spending more time witnessing to other people. Whatever the case may be. And what this does is that this creates a community. You have a sense of belonging, and it's very strong because everybody else thinks like you. So the witness feels very special. They feel like they're part of this wonderful, united organization. So they feel special for reasons that are not in the Bible. They feel special because they're a part of this organization. So the list goes on. So outside the physical reality of controlling how you look, who you hang out with, hairstyles, things like that, what you can do with your free time, and also the major time commitment and expectation to be involved with all the meetings, all of them. If you're not at the Kingdom Hall on Sunday, somebody's going to know, and they're going to call you, and they're going to check on you and wonder why you weren't there. And you better have a good excuse. The other thing is individualism is discouraged and groupthink prevails. So what I mean by that is kind of like what I said before. I call this, I don't know if this is an appropriate term, but this is what it reminds me of is like religious communism. You're all the same. You all must agree. And there's not much room for disagreement at all. There is no free thinking. And they are actually very open about this. When I've met with my Jehovah's Witnesses years ago, and I still keep in contact with some online, and they're very honest about this, that we should not be free thinkers. We should conform to what the Watchtower says, because free thinking is what got Eve in trouble. Had she obeyed, remember, they see God and the Watchtower is the same thing. Had she obeyed, we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in. So free thinkers, that's bad. We should listen to everything the Watchtower says. And groupthink, let me just give you the definition of groupthink, because this is a good definition. The practice of thinking or making decisions as a group in a way that discourages creativity or individual responsibility. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. Groupthink, if you are that one person that says something that goes against the crowd, you're the black sheep. You know what it reminds me of, now that I think of it? Kind of the end of Titanic when the ship was going down. I can't remember the actress's character, but Kathy Bates was the actress. She did an amazing job in this movie. And I'm not sure if everybody's watched this movie, so spoiler alert, the ship goes down. But she was always kind of different than the people around her when it came to her humanity. So everybody is getting off the ship and they're getting in the lifeboats, and Kathy Bates' character is looking back at the ship going down, and there's a whole group of people in this little tiny ship that's taking them to safety. Kathy Bates' character is like, guys, these are our husbands back there. These are our people. These are, what's wrong with you people? We need to go back and help them. And nobody said anything. And the guy who was instructing the boat basically threatened her to shut her mouth. And I think that's a really good example of how groupthink works. If you're saying something that goes against the crowd, you're the enemy. And I think that that's a really dangerous position to be in, whether it's in religion, whether it's in a relationship, politics, whatever the case may be, groupthink is real. And it can be a very persuasive tool when you're trying to get people to agree with your ideologies, whether they're right or wrong. You can't go against the Watchtower. You should not speak against the Watchtower. To disagree with the Watchtower or with anything that's being said or done in your congregation, which they call them congregations, by the way, not churches, then you are in a position of groupthink. You should not be different than all the other witnesses. Your beliefs should agree with all the other witnesses. So moving on, the last two that are bullet pointed here, the need for obedience and dependency. You are obedient to the organization and you are dependent on them. And then there's also a rigid set of rules that you have to follow and regulations as well. So these kinds of things compiled can all account for how they can control the behavior of the witness. All right, the next thing is repetitive behavior. The key to mind control is repetition. I want you to think of a hamster on a hamster wheel. That's a Jehovah's Witness. They are constantly working. Their routine and their schedule is very rigid. They don't have time to think. They don't have time to research. They're just doing what they're told. They're trying to be devout witnesses. They are doing what they think is right. Guys really love them because they are stressed. And this is just purely my opinion, but I find a very strong correlation with fibromyalgia and Jehovah's Witnesses. Maybe it's like a stress disease. I don't know, but I don't understand why so many of them have fibromyalgia. But then you look at their schedule and think about it. They're doing jobs. They have children. They have families. They have other responsibilities outside of just their religion, but the religion dominates their life. They are at the Kingdom Hall. They are going door to door. They are doing their Watchtower studies. I would arguably say that a devout Jehovah's Witness wouldn't have one day go by where they weren't doing something for Jehovah's Kingdom. And because in the mind of the Jehovah's Witness, if you're not doing something for Jehovah's organization, if you're not doing something for the kingdom, then you might die at Armageddon. You may not be doing enough to survive Armageddon, which is part of their eschatology. And again, we will get into that, but that's a fear that motivates them. So I'm going to read some Watchtower quotes that are very pertinent to this topic. Okay, here's the first one. False religious propaganda from any source should be avoided like poison. Really, since our Lord has used the faithful and discreet slave, which is the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, by the way, the men who run the organization, to convey to us sayings of everlasting life, why should we ever want to look anywhere else? Next, we must also be on guard against extended association with worldly people. Perhaps it's a neighbor, a school friend, a workmate, or a business associate. We may reason he respects the witnesses, he leads a clean life, and we do talk about the truth occasionally, yet the experience of others proves that in time we may even find ourselves preferring such worldly company to that of a spiritual brother or sister. What are some of the dangers of such a friendship? Now, these are older quotes, but these are quotes that stay true. These are beliefs and ideologies that are undergirded in Jehovah's Witness culture. So because you're, if you're not a Jehovah's Witness, now think about it for a second. If you're a Jehovah's Witness and your religion is telling you that everybody on the outside of the organization is evil and worldly, you're going to want to associate with other Jehovah's Witnesses. When in reality, if you were to actually go associate with other people, you might get a hint that maybe the organization's wrong. Think about Rapunzel, remember? That's kind of what I'm getting at right here. They want them to avoid the world, to stay clenched in, into the organization. And these are just a few quotes. You can find, you can go online to their own website and look at their publications and find that this stuff is still true today. And it's very easy to find. All right, moving on to the I in the BITE model, which stands for information control. I personally find a lot of interest in this particular part of mind control, because I just think it's shocking. It's weirdly fascinating to research these things and find out how it works. But especially in the witness organization, it's shocking how they control the information that they get. So I kind of want you guys to think about the book that I mentioned in the beginning, George Orwell, 1984, but kind of think about in the book, or you know, just in life in general, how there's authoritarian type control over the information that's critical of the group that you're discussing. The information that you're receiving must paint the organization in a good light to escape censorship. So typically an organization has a hidden agenda if it's censoring the information that it's giving its members. And we see this in many aspects of life, but especially in the Watchtower. They make threats to the followers that reading critical material against their religious institution will get them disfellowshipped, or it will hand them over to Satan. Like, you use these fear and guilt tactics to keep them from reading this material that's critical of the religion. It also has a hidden agenda if the member of the organization is unable to access material that is critical of that organization. So Jehovah's Witnesses, and I'm trying not to get ahead of myself, but Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons, by the way, are not allowed to look at what they call apostate material. Apostates are ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, ex-members of the religion that have left, and the organization paints them like they are filthy and dirty and satanic. You do not want to talk to an apostate. They're evil. And they will take you away from Jehovah's organization. Mormons have the same thing, except it's called anti-Mormon literature, stuff that's against their church. There are a lot of parallels between Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses that are unavoidable on many of these aspects that we're talking about. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, the only information you are allowed to look at is what's approved by the Watchtower. So the magazines, the publications they make, the website, if you go anywhere else, it's not only looked down upon, but you are a weak Jehovah's Witness. This is bad. That is wrong. What's right is, ooh, look at, we've already done the work for you. Here, read this. And it's censored, okay? So the Watchtower organization, whatever information they give them, is tailored and censored to fit their theological agenda. So research into publications that are not approved by the governing body, the faithful and discreet slave, is strongly discouraged. Anything written by ex-members, apostates, is forbidden. Think about this logic for a second. I want everybody to kind of think about why they would.
Ladies and gentlemen, this presentation is much longer, but sadly, we're at the end of the hour now. We do have to live within budget restraints, and we're doing the best we can to present this material. Now, this presentation is at my website. It's posted there at genuinechristianitynow.com in the videos section, and it's titled Mind Control, Entering into the Mind of Jehovah's Witness.
Hey,